had already...
Testing. Well, I remember the development of the Producers Association. Now, I believe you said that you also did a lot of work with the breed associations, the Jersey and the Guernsey and the Holstein and even the Ayrshires.
Yes. We attended their meetings. They held annual meetings.
Who were some of the earlier people who had purebred cattle in the state?
Well, the purebred cattle herd was owned largely by the few larger dairymen that we had at the time. Take like Bob Shuford for Jerseys, McCatherin at Wilmington for Holsteins, and Ayrshires,
Tufts,
men of that type.
Bill Moorhead Jerseys and Governor Moore?
Bob Shuford, sure, Jerseys.
Shuford had Jerseys, but also Biltmore Estate.
Yeah, Biltmore Estate.
And Governor Morrison over at
Marcroft
Farm?
Charlotte.
And the Hunters?
And the Lutzes, smaller, but they were all purebred Jerseys, that is, the Lutzes were Lutz Farms.
And I know that the Hunter Dairy in Charlotte and...
Yes.
And Arrowwood Farm?
That's right. That was Arrowwood Farms followed with the Hunters.
Ashcrafts?
Ashcraft, Hunters and Ashcraft.
Well, there was a time when these purebred associations had a lot of sales.
Well, they held annual sales. They tried to every year. We helped them in that. And the contact, I thought, was worth more than anything else because we got contact with our few leaders that we had. Mm-hmm. And Thurman Chatham, he'd just do anything you'd ask him to do, almost. I mean, borrowed a little money or a little something like that.
Well, then you started having a lot of junior dairy cattle shows.
Shows, yeah, we started that. And they grew like everything. We had, we not only had them with the whites, but we had them Negro shows. Mm-hmm. Well, the first Negro show was held at Greensboro, and they paid for it. The Niggers paid for it. Nigger insurance company at Durham.
Oh yeah.
Paid largely the whole thing.
What's it called? Capital Life Insurance Company?
Yeah, I believe it is. Capital
Durham.
Life Insurance Company.
And the Negro-owned insurance company paid for it.
And the contact. Daring just wasn't anything much in the 5, 6, 7, 8 along there. It's just side issue around the town. And some extra farm butter that went to Richmond, come back as processed butter.
then the creameries were selling butter, but the big growth of the dairy industry really took place about the time of World War II, didn't it?
Well, we had a good foundation, and they just went to it.
And a lot of silos were built?
Yeah, lots of them. Just lots of them. It got to the point where the farmer did it himself then. He wanted it.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little about George Coble getting into the business.
Well, George was a big, I always thought George was a big promoter, but something that we needed. George, if you wanted to put on a show here, he'd finance it for you. Or he'd do things like that. And maybe not right good business, but it was selling the industry.
Yeah.
And that's what we were after. And we, those shows did, we had to held them all over the state. And they, of course, worked them, and the state associations would held the Guernsey would try to have shows. Holstein held annual shows. I don't know, they kind of, they dropped that kind of work. They're not pushing them anymore.
The purebreds are not nearly as prominent now as they were. Well, in the meantime, the Dairy Herd Improvement Association work was developed.
Yes, that.
Now, you started that in the state, didn't you?
Yep. The, we, I just think of the first. I just hadn't thought about that for a good long time. I don't know, I just hate to give you a date. We did a lot of personal work before we had to organize. Just go out and get a man and do about all the work for him, that is, figuring and mm-hmm. stuff like that for him. And got the work started that way. And I'm just trying to think. I can't hardly think of the actual date we first started. But cow testing work is a part of feeding. And a location of the good cows, good producers. And you've got to have it to do good breeding. The daughters of a certain bull, if they're no good, why, we don't want to use him. And if we've got another bull, yes, give them good producing daughters, and you've got to have records to do that with. And that all come along, I don't think we had any, I just haven't thought about these records.
I can't remember when the organized programs got underway, but I do know that you started having cow testers, people who'd go around in certain areas and run the tests.
Well, that was... That was where the people were, had purebreds.
Yeah.
And that work had to be supervised by the college. I mean, the association, the National Association, required all official tests to be supervised by the college. And we were doing scattered. That take like Biltmore and all these big large herds had official testing, and we had to send people there.
And the testing of the herd testing that was not a part of the breed official testing sort of grew out of that, didn't it?
Well, the two worked together, the official testing. If we had two or three fellows doing official testing out here, we could send a fellow out there. And it cost the individual less if there's several of them than if just one, that is, that transportation and stuff like that. And I know, I don't know, I just, that date slipped me.
Well, it's not that important.
We had a man down here in Eastern Carolina that come in here from Ohio that had some purebred jerseys. And he wanted to carry on his official testing. And I sent a fellow down there, it cost like a dickens. Transportation there and back.
Mm-hmm.
And he got way behind, and I had to write the association the Guernsey, National Guernsey Association, told him, I said, I can't carry this fellow. And you people, the National Association has got to stand back of it or else the law will just stop it testing. And they did. They gave him notice that he'd have to pay up his testing. And I'm just giving you that as an example.
Well, I came into the picture while much of this was going on, and I know you also played a major role in starting artificial breeding in the state. Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, we, back in the beginning, the purebred bull was very, very common. They just used whatever bull to freshen the cattle. And we said that pine wood bull usually do that and was sometimes surer than the purebred bull. And so we began to organize. At that time, the Department of Agriculture had a section, purebred sire section. And I know he had the dean, great big fella. Can't think of his name right now. He was head of it. And I had him down here several times. And we organized bull associations. And then we'd sell. We'd talk the thing and go around, organize it, set up an organization, and decide what we'd charge each member to become a member. And that money was used to buy a good bull, a purebred bull. I believe the first one I organized was in Mecklenburg County. And we got the bulls from Meredith. Meredith was quite a Jersey herd in New York at that time. And
That was the Keenan farm, wasn't it? Was that the Keenan farm?
No, Keenan farm.
Oh, that was another farm. Yeah.
We finally got the Keenan farm.
Yeah, but this was Meredith. Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Meredith, I think Meredith was one of the best Jersey herds in this nation, or rather had a good reputation. I don't know whether it's in existence now or not. I don't think so. It was a big herd, and we got that, and we organized, I think, 9 testing associations with 54 purebred bulls. That's what's in my mind without looking it up. And we had a little trouble with them, just like you will with everything. Some one person had to keep the bull. And if he didn't take care of that bull, other members would complain about it. That happened in Mecklenburg County. And we kind of switched then, just to individuals. We're going to organize here. We're going to say we're going to put a block, bull block here, and a bull block over here, and a bull block over here, and we put a bull, and then we'd change those bulls every 2 years, bring them around. And it'd keep the cost of good bulls in reason down so that the average farmer would take care of, would not object to it. And it was just the understanding that change would be made, and not hold one block responsible for the failures of another block. And if the fellows didn't want to change, why wouldn't change? They'd do something else. In other words, we kind of went to individual blocks. And the movement grew, though, and the man for good bulls grew. We built that up. And I don't know what they're doing right now. I haven't kept up with that.
Well, it's all mostly artificial breeding now.
How?
Mostly artificial breeding.
Oh, yeah, it's artificial breeding, and it's on a big scale.
Now, you helped start that.
Yes. We brought in the American Breeders Association, and that's financed by Palmer Lee Prentice, who married John D. Rockefeller's daughter, got in big money in that.
Yeah.
And furnished John Brown. I recommended him as a district man for this state, and they finally gave him all the way from Florida to this state.
Now, John Brown,
his whole area is just a district man, and he'd organize local stuff.
John Brown was the next extension man you brought in after Clevenger.
Yes.
And Clevenger and Kimry and Farnham. John was a younger man you had brought in.
Yeah, and he was an experienced feller. He'd had some kind of agent work and one thing or another.
And then when artificial breeding started, the American Breeders Service hired him as a contact man.
That's it. He was a district agent, they called him.
Yeah.
And
moved him to Black Mountain.
Yeah. He was a good man. He was one of the best extension people I ever worked with.
Uh-huh.
He just knew how to handle people.
Well, now
get things done.
You worked with me and in connection with another program that's developed rather highly, and that was the Institutional Breeders Program.
It'll take Goldsboro down here was one of the leading herds in production among those herds. Well, it ranked up in the national organizations.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of went crazy about down. They got an awful good herdsman down there, and he just gave his whole time to the feed and care of that herd. And that's what it takes to make records.
Mr. Airey, some of the rest of us have some knowledge of how these things about this time develop, but there's one other area that I'd like to get you to talk some about that switches the subject a little bit. But you've been around a long time. Who was president of NC State when you first went to work for it?
Dr. Winston.
Dr. Winston was the first president, the president when you went to work.
Yeah, I see. I think he, Riddick followed him.
Riddick followed Winston.
And Harrelson.
Harrelson was the chancellor when I came here.
That's right.
Harrelson was the first chancellor under consolidation, I guess.
And then
Boston.
Boston come next.
And then Caldwell.
Caldwell.
And then the present chancellor.
That's right.
And you were, when you were first came into extension, you were working directly under Dean Shaw, was this right?
That's right.
And you reported to him all of the time that you were...
Yeah, I had Palmer Lee Prentice come down here and go before Dean Shaw. I told Dean Shaw, I told him this before he come. I said, now, those people, they've got the means to put this thing over in the goodest way, but they want some help from extension people. And I want him to come down here and tell you what he would want if he comes here, comes located. See, they built a breeding station in Asheville.
Yes, I know they did.
And he come down here and he explained it to them, and he said, now we want some field hemp. Now that's what, in brief, we want you to help us organize local breeding association. And John, of course, Dean John Schaub fell right in with it. He said, well, we'd be glad to do that. And then the Nate come right around and put work, put money in it.
Now, for many years, while you were in heading Dairy Extension, Professor Ruffner was heading the teaching program.
Teaching, yeah. Ruffner never did do much field work. I mean,
he was mostly a teaching person.
All together.
And Grinnell's was in charge of research.
In research, yes, and taught what veterinary work.
What veterinary work we
had. They gave here.
So in those days, you were head of extension, Ruffner was head of teaching, and Grinnell's was doing what research and veterinary work that was being done.
He was a member of the livestock of the dairy group.
Yeah.
College Dairy Group,
yes.
That's what it was.
He's
a member of the College Dairy Group.
And taught some.
I used Grinnell's a lot. That's one thing that I could always get is just help.
You used the state veterinarian some too, didn't you?
Well, yeah, but...
Dr. Moore?
Grinnell's was a better talker than Moore was.
Somebody told me that you and... you and Ruffner or somebody took Moore to a meeting out to a school one night and he went to sleep by a potbelly stove and you forgot him. Is that right or not?
I don't think I would believe.
Well.
Grinnell's was sort of an extension worker. He liked that. And I had him out a lot of meetings. He'd talk on health. Herd health, just general stuff.
Mastitis and...
And of course that appealed to the farmers
and,
because...
Bangs disease.
And expensive and not many of them either.
Yeah.
Then, back in those days.
That's right.
And Grinnell's was a lot of help to me. I used Grinnell's from the college and Fitzpatrick and Bates when they were with the Southern Railway.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Fitzpatrick went with the National Guernsey Breeders Association. He come from that place here, mm-hmm. or to Hill.
To Quail Roost Farm, yeah.
And Bates died several years ago. He was a good worker though.
I never knew him very well. I think I met him once.
Yeah, he's a good worker. And then I used people from Washington, the milk people, and the breed association people.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the more recent developments. When Dr. Hilton came here, he graduated from the same school you did. He went to China Grove School.
Who?
Dr. Hilton, Jimmy Hilton.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
He grew up in Catawba County.
Yeah, I know it.
And then he came here about the same time that Dr. Baver came, and there were a lot of changes taking place. And Dr. Hilton and Dr. Baver were the people who brought me into the picture. Mm-hmm. And I remember... with great appreciation working with you on many, many different occasions, but two or three things stand out in my mind, and I want to get you to talk a little about that. One is that you and your staff, all of whom I knew and liked, had been here for, as you say, 144 years or a long, long time, and you're all getting pretty close to retirement. And I remember really racking my brain, how can we ever find young people who will have the kind of dedication that John Airey has? And our Dairy Foundation had come into being about that time. And that's when we brought George Hyde in to study with you for a year before he got into it. And I'd like to hear you talk about some of these newer things. Dr. Hilton and Al Shaw and Dr. Roberts and others who come in later.
Well, I'm just trying to think.
The thing I appreciate about you was the fact that you were wise enough to realize that there was a gap here that needed to be bridged, and you helped do it. And I think that's one of the great contributions you made in to these younger people.
Well, we just started with, we didn't have much to start with. And I saw right away that we had to sell a dairy cow. I know I used to, the rejections of army rejections, the number of World War I was heavy, awful heavy, and it was a complaint. And now in Eastern Carolina, why, they didn't want no cows. Those fellows owned those big farms, they didn't have land pastures. The cows would get out, and this is what they tell me, get out in the fields and so like that, and that is for their tenants. And the feeling was just no cows. We had that kind of thing.
What role did the pasture program, the new pasture grasses, play?
Well, let's see, the first pasture man come on was, he died way back there. Can't think of his name right now. The pastor man put on a specialist, agronomy people.
Yeah, I can't remember who that was.
And he was a good man. Worked 3 or 4 years, maybe more, and died in his younger life. I don't remember his trouble now. But Lord, we talked, we had deer schools all during the winter, and I tried to cover the whole subject then. Pastures, feed.
What role did the development of the Ladino clover and fescue and things of that kind, and the newer grasses that came in? You used those a lot too, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I'd try to get somebody from the agronomy. And I had that fellow, I can't think of his name right now.
Well, of course, later on, Dr. Woodhouse and Dr. Lovern,
yeah,
did a lot of work, and Sam Dobson then.
That was during the latter part,
yeah,
of my work.
Yeah.
I tried to have them in these dairy schools. Feed was our big trouble. Feed everywhere. Our cows wasn't fed. And I know I used to tell them, I said, now if you had to drive these cows to town, let the people see them, you'd feed them. You'd drive your horses. And I told them, I said, you put your legume hay up in the front part of the barn and feed the horses. Cows are in the shed here and you feed them straw. And we just had to sell that subject.
Yeah.
And I think we did a fairly good job of it.
You did a great job. Well, I know we could go on and on here. Personally, I have a great appreciation for you, for the help you were to me when I came into the picture. I traveled with you quite a bit, and I felt that you were a very wise advisor to me. You worked with the Dairy Foundation, you worked with all of these things. And I think that in addition to the great contribution that you made pioneering the dairy industry in this state and recruiting some people with special skills who would help you develop it, and getting the confidence of the people in the state. I think one of the great contributions you made was in making it possible for some of the people who succeeded you to take advantage of some of that experience.
Well, I think that's true.
And George Hyatt worked with you just to learn from you.
Yeah, George is a good worker. He is a very able fellow. And I thought George did a good job. He was an individual. He's sort of high tempered.
Yeah, I know he was.
And
but capable.
He's capable. Yeah, he's a very capable fellow. Very capable.
Well, I appreciate your letting me come here. We've been talking for well over an hour now, and you have put into the record a lot of information about those early days that couldn't have been had any other way. And what we're going to do with this is to make it available so that whoever writes the history of the School of Agriculture will have directly from some of you who built the programs in those early days, what the conditions were, how you went about it, how you dedicated yourselves to it. And I think that's a very important part of the whole story.
In the beginning, before motion pictures, we had in our dairy school tonight, and we even held day meetings. We had a set of black curtains we took with us and put them up over the windows so we could get pictures. And they'd come out to that. That was something new.
Yeah.
We had a big crowd.
You didn't even have moving pictures when you first started.
No. No, I carried a little old gas container, a tube. It was about that long and about that big around. I don't remember now just where I got them. They were hard to find. And that showed a light on a little concern right short ways from a blaze, that gas light, and it made a very bright reflection, a very bright reflection. And that's the type of lantern that we used in the beginning.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of trouble because I couldn't find them. There was just certain people who would handle them.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember whether it was I believe it was we got those things largely from bicycle people.
Oh. Bicycle.
They had those things made and put on
bicycles.
On bicycles.
Well, it's very good for people who come on in the years in the future to be able to have access to records that tell them just how this thing got to where it is.
Well, I realized that a long time ago, when I selected a man, I liked to have a fellow that had experience in what I was going to have him do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of ways to do things, and a lot of ways you've got to do things when you're dealing with people.
Yeah.
Sort of like Graver used to be. You remember him?
Yeah, I remember Graver.
Well, he retired on account of a bad heart.
Forestry extension specialist.
And forest, that's right. And went into just private business, and they told me he made more money that way than he did when the college paid him.
Yeah.
And he Well, he worked for several years. I don't remember, several years though. And he worked got pretty heavy. And he had a doctor here that was advising him about how much activity, physical activity he could take. And he said one day, this doctor told him, said, "I don't think you got much confidence in me." Graber told me this himself. He says, "I got as much confidence in you as I got in any human being."
Yeah.
And he emphasized that human being.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with the public, you got to deal with human beings.
That's right.
And you can't tell them to just do this or do that. You got to tell them what it will result in if he does this to him.
Uh-huh.
What will be worth to him.
That's a good philosophy of extension work right there.
And you get him to do it.
Yeah.
But if you go out there and give him a prescription on a piece of paper, he won't
do it. Well, Mr. Airy, thank you very much for spending this time, and it's as I said, it's a real personal joy for me, having worked with you many years myself, to have this renewed visit.
Well, I was just tickled to death when I heard you were coming. I just wondered you coming for. I haven't seen you in so long, and I always had a great regard for your judgment.
Well, you did more, as a crippled man, you did more for the state than a lot of men with two good legs, I can tell you that. You still have your farm at Statesville?
No, I sold that. I took advantage of this boom we had up there a little while back.
And sold it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I got $500 an acre for it.
Yeah.
The whole place.
How much acreage did you have?
232.
Yeah, well, you did all right.
232.
I remember visiting your farm there with your tenant after the dairy shows. I remember going out there with you to your farm after a junior dairy show in Statesville where I'd been judging.
Mm-hmm.
And your farmer's son had been showing some calves. And I saw him there, and I wanted to try to make him feel good, and I said, "Well, I saw you in the show yesterday, and you did very well." Now, he didn't win, but he had done pretty well, and he wasn't very happy. He said, "Well, I tell you," said, "you're after next is what I'm looking forward to." I said, "Well, why are you looking forward to your after next?" He said, "Well, you're after next, that Compton girl and Presley won't be eligible." Well, thank you very much, Mr. Airy. This is D.W. Calvert speaking. This is February the 1st, 1979, in the home of Mr. John Airy, who probably has worked with the School of Agriculture, the Agricultural Extension Service, more years than any living person that I know. And he's given us a fine insight into the conditions and some of the programs that were operative and which he was largely responsible for starting and building a foundation on which later programs could be built. So with this, we'll sign off in the interview with Mr. Airy.
Byron H. Butler. I don't know why those initials, because I've got, as I said a while ago, my memory is failing on me. Dean Schaub told me one day, I went out to see him several times after he retired, and he says that, I believe the way he put it, that some old scientist a few years ago said that there were so many cells that you were born with in your brain. And when they were all filled, there's nothing more to retain stuff that, new stuff.
Yeah.
In other words, you go to a lecture and fella give him a good many things, different things, and he go home, he couldn't give you any of them. He had a general idea of the whole business, but the detail didn't register.
Yeah.
And I think whoever that was knew what he was talking about.
Well, I think all of us tend to lose.
He was a Philadelphia editor, and his doctors advised him to go south on account of his health, and he went to Southern Pines. And he bought some of that land down there. And the first thing he did, J.A. Conover did I say you, Jay?
Yeah, you did.
He was a Kansas man.
And yeah.
He was a dairyman,
yeah.
State dairyman, that was the term they give him, and he worked out of the Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. Well, Conover, Byron Butler, first, this is what he told me himself. He says, I first come down here and I thought I'd put in a vineyard. And I didn't know anything about vineyard, and I put in one, and grape disease.
I'm not.
Whatever it was, I can't think of it right now. Cleaned me out. Then I put in some beef cattle, and it says Texas tick fever cleaned those out. Now I'm building a little dairy herd, and I'm thinking about building a silo, and I want some help. And he was quite an editor. He had written a 6 or 8 page folder on his butter, Walhalla butter, I remember that. And he was selling it to those Yankees down there for about 50 cents a pound. And I remember his wife, she was very much interested too, like Northern women would be. And she says, we fix it up in brick form. Says these farmers around here just put it up most any form. We put it up in brick form, and she went out and got it. And it was just four. It was just a form big enough to hold a pound of butter. About the size of a brick, something like that. I said, how do you get the butter out of it? She said, we just put the form on a big plate and push the butter in there. Well, she said, we always heat it before we put the butter in there, and the butter slip out.
Yeah.
Well, I say you destroy the body of the butter that you heated. You want that granular.
Well, they used to have those butter molds, you know.
But they had a handle on them, push.
Yeah. You're talking about it before we had the handle.
You had to heat it a form.
Well, was that the Butler?
He wrote the first agricultural sheet for the News and Observer.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. But I remember that very distinctly.
Was he any relation to Eugene Butler?
I don't know. I think it's a
different one.
Different altogether.
Did you work very much with Leonard Tufts down at Pinehurst?
Oh yeah, he was one of those herds where we just had to send an individual. He did official testing from the very very beginning. Leonard Tufts was, well, he was president of the National Association.
Of Ayrshire Breeders.
Yeah, Ayrshire Breeders Association.
Well, you know, I have a little place down there near Pinehurst now.
You do?
And there's a golf course there that's run by his grandson.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Tufts, and he's still there. He came down here. Did he come down here for his health?
Yes. That's the way I got it. And he landed up there, he bought that place for $1 an acre.
Dollar an acre.
I heard a lot of people tell me that down there.
That whole Pinehurst?
Yeah, that whole acreage, $1 an acre. Well, of course, some he may have paid a little more for it.
Uh-huh.
But $1 an acre is what he got for paid for it. And he was quite a developer. He put on a Moore County Fair down there for a number of years and paid the premiums, the whole business himself.
Uh-huh.
And he was quite a hog man, as well as an asher man. He put the ashers in because he couldn't get good milk. There wasn't very few pasteurizers in the state when he went in there. And he said, yeah, I just had to have good milk. And I put these ashers in here. And whatever Tuff did, why, he'd go whole hog. I mean, he went right on. He was a man of a lot of ability.
A lot of ability and enough money to be able to do something.
And, I like Mr. Tuff. He was a very homely kind of a man. Just he wasn't a rich type fellow. Like
he wasn't arrogant or uppity or anything of that sort. Uh huh. Well, I met him, but I can't remember very much about him.
I remember. I was in his office one day, and his secretary come in and said, I got a letter from so-and-so that used to work here, and he's hunting work. He said, the poor fellow ain't got no job. He says, well, you just write him a nice letter. And tell him, and we're in about the same shape he's in. They're cutting down on a force instead of enlarging it.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's